Welcome to the Briefing Room, a Healthcare Communications and Association initiative brought to you by the Foresight Committee. I'm Jo Spadaccino, co-founder of STIRD, and I'm co-leading the Briefing Room series with Rhiannon Meaden, Global Head of Complete Health Vision, a McCann Health Medical Communications Company, and my colleague on the Foresight Committee. The HCA Foresight Committee explores topics that have relevance not only for today, but also help us as a profession prepare for tomorrow. In our briefing room, we're talking to prominent senior business leaders at the forefront of change in a wide variety of roles in the pharmaceutical sector to help us build a timely picture of what the future key areas of focus are and what the future asks will be for us as healthcare communicators. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Jim Kennedy from Shionogi. So Jim, can I ask you to please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your role?
Hi, Joe. First of all, thanks very much for the invitation to participate in this videocast. I'm Jim Kennedy. I head up human resources for Shionogi in Europe. Shionogi is a mid-sized Japanese pharmaceuticals company, long established in Japan. We've been established now in Europe for 10 years, and we're around about 300 employees and rapidly growing. So part of my job, a large part of my job, is making sure that we can make that growth successful through our people. Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Jim. Yeah, any organisation that's growing is going to rely heavily on a function like yours, I imagine. So I'm not an HR specialist, I'm a communicator, but I am of the belief that there's never really been a greater time to focus on the needs of the workforce when it comes to organisational effectiveness, I suppose. So I'm really particularly excited to speak to you today and hear your views on what lies ahead for us in the health sector and in pharmaceuticals specifically. And of course, how you see communications fitting into this. So I'm going to dive right in with probably a big question about the sector as a whole. And ask, so what do you believe will be the top three developments or influential trends impacting our sector? And let's think about that question in the context of maybe the next year, so the next 12 months, but then looking out even further to maybe the five-year horizon. Let's go big.
Yeah. Joe, I think the first thing is that we're still in the middle, right in the midst of COVID. So I think that has turned things pretty much on their head, challenged an awful lot of previously held beliefs and paradigms. And I think that this is going to continue for the foreseeable in all sorts of different ways. So that's one thing. I think the general economic landscape is really quite worrying, and how that's going to affect us as a business as well as other businesses, whether or not in the pharmaceutical sector. And I think both of those things are going to affect an ongoing thing anyway, which is attracting, sourcing, securing, and keeping talent within the organization. So I see that both as short term and medium term.
And I mean, in pharma, as you've also just pointed out, actually, it's society wide at the moment. The pace of change really is relentless. So tell me a bit more about how both your organization, Shionogi as a whole, but also your function specifically is responding to that pace of change.
I don't think it's just the pace of change. I think that's certainly there. I think it's how change is manifesting itself, which is a consequence of what we were just talking about, COVID, the economic picture at the moment, and how that informs how we attract and keep people within our organisation. So I think the COVID thing, as I say, that's really challenging us to question what's going on, particularly when it comes to employee expectations. I think things have been pretty much turned on their head, what people expect, what they want from their employer, what proposition an employer can offer people, and how we manage all of that. How do we create an environment for collaboration? How do we create an environment for people to feel connected in spite of the fact that an awful lot of people are working virtually quite a bit of the time, and some of those dynamics. And I think what's also really interesting about the current situation with respect to employee expectations is your expectations may be very, very different from mine, but we both work in the same organization. Mm. So part of the complication now is that you have all of these differences in individual expectations, and how do you get a handle around that and make it most effective for the majority of your people? And as you rightly said, how do you build organization effectiveness as best you can? So that's one aspect. The pace of change is being affected by economic circumstances at the moment. I can remember 30, 40 years ago what it was like, but for a very, very large number of my colleagues, they've not experienced inflation, high interest rates, albeit interest rates at the moment are a tiny fraction of what I grew up with when I started my career. But that also has an impact on employee expectations and what they would want an employer to be able to do, particularly around pay and those kinds of things. And then, of course, as I say, that just leads into the whole talent question about how do we attract, how do we retain? So in answering your question specifically, what's our job? It's as best as possible deciphering those environmental factors, and then working out a plan of attack, if you like, and creating the culture, the environment, as best as possible for people to feel connected, for people to thrive, and for people to feel that they can give their best and be of their best. And so it's a very, very large organization development piece. So it's talent management. I've mentioned culture. It's development. How do we train, develop people? How do we help people progress and advance their careers? And doing that in an environment, as I say, where people have different expectations. So the expectations, for example, of younger employees is perhaps quite different from employees who are older, more mature, more advanced in their career. So I would say that's a very, very large part of it. And as a growing organization, recruitment, the whole selection piece, the proposition that we can offer, the story we can tell about our organization, how that might come across to potential employees, as well as being able to tell our story for our existing employees as well. Mm. The COVID situation was really quite surprising because attrition rates increased. It wasn't a phenomenon which was unique to us, as we found out when we spoke to a number of peer organizations. But it was really, really surprising what was going on, the reasons why people were leaving, and also choose their choice of timing when leaving the organization. It hadn't seen this before. It was very unexpected. It was a bit of a shock to the organization system. But as we got our heads around it and understood or try to understand what was going on, that really has informed what we've been doing as an organization now when it comes to those things that I was mentioning before about career advancement, about rewards and recognition, about culture, about attachment, sense of belonging, purpose, and a lot of those aspects which are absolutely critical to the employment life cycle. And I think as a result, one of the things that we have to get used to is that whilst we very often want to be able to retain people for as long as possible, we have to accept that actually maybe the new reality is that you're only going to have people in your organization for actually a relatively short time, might be 3 years, 4 years, might be less. So I think part of how we address the present and the future is getting ourselves comfortable with that prospect. And that's particularly true of those people who are still very active in making their careers. So I'm talking about the younger managers, maybe people in their early 30s through to their 40s, when that career development phase is so important for them, not just in their professional lives, but it also sets them up for what they want to do in their private lives as well.
It's difficult to unpick everything that's going on, because it's layer upon layer, isn't it? Yeah, it really absolutely. Is. So many different, kind of drivers that makes it quite difficult to kind of work out how to respond in all those ways.
And you know what, Joe? I think this is the thing. There isn't one answer. So it might be that we have to provide multiple answers according to our different audiences and what the employee expectations of those audiences are. And that's been there, but I think it's just so much more accentuated now.
Yeah. It almost seems to have made the discipline, more sophisticated in some respects. It's much more complex.
That's a lovely word. I love that. Yes, it is. It's critical thinking. And I think how we respond as an organization, or how we respond as a people team, HR team, is that we can't rely on what used to happen 3-4 years ago. I think some of those beliefs or mores about, if it's this problem, this is the solution. I think that's pretty much redundant now. What we need to do is as best as we possibly can, find out what people are thinking, what they're feeling, do our best to understand that, and then work with them to create solutions around that. So some of those solutions might be very different from anything which I've done or we've done previously. So that's exciting. And I think but with it comes the challenge that you've got to be prepared to think that way and not just say, right, that's the problem, there's the solution, that worked, that this has always worked for me in the past. I think that's a redundant mode of thinking now. But part of the opportunity in all of this is actually to get really quite close to your colleagues within the business and invite them to be part of the solution. I find that really quite energizing. And I hope that they do too, because it's an opportunity for them to contribute in a slightly different way than just through their functional discipline or job activity.
I guess it goes back to, the glue, the connection that an individual has with the organisation. And if they feel that they're part of decision making, then that's going to be stronger.
I think that's right. And I think that the more we can do that, the better, Joe. Just an example, we've just conducted a pulse survey amongst our employees. And amongst the people who've got less than 2 years service, it's a very interesting set of results. And again, I've not seen the juxtaposition of different data sets and different results like this ever before. So on the one hand, they're telling us that through their completely virtual recruitment and onboarding, it's the best they've ever experienced within any company. Mm-hmm. Forget the fact that it's virtual, it's the best recruitment and onboarding process they've ever been through. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because we had to step up and think, right, we've got to do a different job in a different way to help these people because we can't meet face to face. But at the same time, they're telling us that they don't feel particularly connected or as connected as their peers within the organization. So I'm kind of looking at that and I'm thinking, is there an association there? But it's saying something about this virtual environment or hybrid virtual environment that we've got. And what it also says to me is that we're going to have to do even more work with these individuals to improve that sense of connection.
Yeah, that's really interesting data, actually. Yeah, don't know quite what to make of that myself. but yeah, fascinating. And yeah, just goes to prove the point that we were making, that actually, you know, there's so many different layers that it's not a straightforward answer.
Yeah,
I had them. I had one kind of follow-up question for you. Do you think, and you know, Shionogi, as you kind of talked about, is on a growth journey, is, you know, relatively a small organization, you know, in the context of the pharma sector, in the context of others, it's rather large, but it's all relative. Do you feel that smaller organizations have an advantage in some way of delivering a better employee experience? Just interested in your thoughts.
Yes, I do, because it's easier to work with 300 people than 30,000 or 3,000 or whatever. And I think it's easier to know people amongst that 300. So the proportion of people that you know within that overall population is more significant than you would know within a much larger organization. And I think also that we're not a big pharma company, you're quite right, nor do we wish to be one. And I think that in itself is part of the proposition that we make to people. So if you would like to come and work with us, please understand this is how we work, and these are some of the kind of dynamics that you should expect. So you're immediately accountable, you're immediately visible, and despite your seniority and your experience, there are sometimes you just have to roll up your sleeves and get dirt on your fingernails. We all have to muck it. The collaboration aspect of it is I think pretty marvelous. So again, regardless of seniority, experience, position, the vast majority of our people are just very approachable. And if we have a problem to solve, who are the best people to get around that problem? Mm. I'm not sure that if that's always the way in which Big Pharma works. But for us, if that's an environment that appeals to you, brilliant.
If
it's not, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But we're not for you. You're not for us.
Yeah, totally.
But the counterpoint, though, Joe, that I would say is that Big Pharma still dominates. So it dominates the entire sector, and I think it still sets the norm for what people expect things like career advancement and progression would be. And that's an interesting counterpoint for us, because we're not a big pharma company, so we can't provide the same career runways or pathways or whatever you want to call them as a big pharma company. So that kind of takes us back to that point we were talking about before, which is that we've got to get comfortable that we might only have somebody for 3 or 4 years in the organization.
Interesting. It is, you know, there's a lot of preparation, I guess, and it's, you know, there's a lot of talk about authenticity and just being very clear about what it is that you have to offer, so, you know, so individuals can make that choice almost before they join. And yet there are some of these broader contexts that, you know, might be a bit more in the subconscious, and but it's good to be aware of them. Yeah, interesting. I'm mindful that this question might be a bit simplistic based on the conversation we've just had, but if you did have a magic wand, which of your greatest challenges would you solve? Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, I think it's mainly around the macro factors, so things that are affecting us all, regardless of what we do, where we do it, which sector we work in, which part of the country, which part of the world we are. I think the political leadership landscape is very worrying indeed. So if I had the opportunity to throw out the magic fairy dust, it would be quality of leadership in politics and in society. And then I think, you know, we kind of talked about one of the symptoms of what's been going on, which is around employee expectations. I'm going to say something here which might be a bit controversial. I think more and more I'm seeing employees or people, and I'm not just talking about some of the people that I talk to either as prospective employees or maybe some of our existing employees. I think that there's an increasing sense of entitlement. Mm-hmm. But I don't get the sense that people feel that there's a responsibility counterpoint that goes with that.
Mm-hmm.
So if
interesting.
I've still got some magic fairy dust left over. I would want to throw that out and see more balance between this is what I feel I'm due, but to help make that happen, this is what I'm going to do and be responsible for.
Excellent. Excellent. Good answers. I wish I had a magic wand to give you, but I don't. Not at this
stage.
Don't
we all? I keep losing mine. Yeah.
So I wanted to ask about sustainability. Obviously, you know, just coming off the back of COP26 in the UK last year, you know, it's a watchword in many a boardroom at the moment. And I guess I'm thinking about it in its broadest sense, you know, whether it's social, environmental and economic. So I just wondered if you had an opinion or a perspective on what role you believe pharma could and should play in that sense. And if there's anything that you wanted to particularly flag from a Shinobi perspective.
I hope you've kind of given me a free pass on this one. I think part of my answer around that would be from a people perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, again, whether it's pharma or any other organization, I think people are the source of competitive advantage. So that's, I think, fundamentally the people in your organization are the difference between your ability to survive or not. So that's one aspect of sustainability, I think. I think pharma, honestly, has got an enormous job in front of it. I don't think pharma is well respected, trusted by the majority of people in society. And I think that's largely a farmer's own making. I also realise it's a pretty tough gig, given the cost of drug development, getting things to market, the regulatory aspects to make sure that a product is safe and does the job that it says it is intended to do. But I think the I think pharma's just got an enormous job to do to improve the relationship with society and decide in a far better, more meaningful way what its social responsibilities are to science, to society.
I also wanted to ask about another big trending topic, digital transformation. It's everywhere. A key topic for the pharmaceutical industry, but actually any industry. So in your role, what tech advancements do you have on your radar, and how important is digital transformation in your function?
I think the potential for it is massive, because I think there's a parallel about being able to inform and keep people informed about their employment, about all of the ancillary aspects of their employment within the organization, so salary, benefits, but also how is the company doing, what's my career pathway, what training and development opportunities are there, delivery of online self-administered learning and development. So putting tools in place that help people help themselves rather than a more old-fashioned way of doing things is what's the maternity policy? Right, I need to go and speak to somebody in the people team, in the HR team. Okay, so I think there's terrific opportunity around that. I think there's terrific opportunity for using digital to help managers be better informed about their people and their teams.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot a bit now, and just I'm really interested to know, based on what we were just talking about there, in terms of going through comm strategy and what you're really trying to achieve with your communications, have you got a good example that you could share with me, either in your current role or previous, that you really felt you'd nailed the communications in terms of what you were trying to achieve?
I think the standout experience for me was in a previous organization. I worked previously in a global medical devices company. And we decided that we wanted to re-engineer our organization culture. The organization had grown quite quickly inorganically, and we recognized that there were different parts of the organization which weren't quite gelling with other parts of the organization. So we undertook, with the help of an external agency, to properly understand how we were perceived, not just by our customers or potential customers, but also by our employees. And that was an incredibly important exercise. What that helped us to do was identify the things that were really important and also what really truly set us apart from our competitors. And also got some really fantastic insight into what people liked about the organization they work for. So in then rolling out our new values, our purpose, our vision, it was one of the best pieces of joined up cross-functional work I've ever been involved in. So it was thinking about not just the external messages, it was thinking about the internal messages you referenced before. If you haven't got the internal messages right, how would you expect to get the right impact with your customers outside? And the work that we did together between HR, marketing, communications, really pretty much across the organization was just super, and it really did have a fantastic effect on the organization. So when we launched this new vision and values, it just landed with such enthusiasm, or to a very enthusiastic response from our employees.
Yeah.
And what was also noticeable was that from a financial performance, business performance perspective, we took off.
Mm.
We really did take off.
Yeah.
I'm sure there were other things going on. I'm sure all of the takeoff was not solely down to this cultural re-engineering, but my goodness, it was amazing, superb.
Yeah, excellent. And there's a couple of things there that I think are just, you know, so important to pull out. And as you said, that, you know, cross-functional working, it's rare that you can pull off, you know, an effective piece of communications in a silo. And so kind of making sure that
I completely agree. It's creating that agenda and making sure that people are contributing to it, people feel co-ownership or that they have co-ownership, that there's scope for discussion, for disagreement, for agreement, for creativity. But I think another big piece of it, which I'm quite sure must be important from your perspective as a healthcare communications specialist, is getting leadership in place, the high agents.
Yeah.
Making sure that they are acting in a way that is consistent with the words.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. It's often the less glamorous, I guess, aspect of what we both do, I think. But without it, we would absolutely not achieve anything near what we could. Brilliant. Thank you. That sounds amazing. It must be a source of great pride to have done that. So yeah, amazing job. I'm gonna just turn a little bit more to kind of the role, I guess, of communicators, and as you alluded to, you know, you kind of work almost hand in glove with communication specialists as part of your role. Do you have a view on what the profession of communication, communicators might need to work harder on in future, and in particular in the context of some of the future trends that we've already talked about?
My experience so far is no, I don't think so. I think certainly the work that we're doing at the moment within Shionogi, I couldn't ask for a better approach, a better mindset, better attitude than the one that I see there. It's highly collaborative, it's very open, it's I've got my views, what are your views, and we'll work together to fuse those to get to the best possible solution, or the one that we're most comfortable with together. Co-ownership, accountability, but also having that authority. So I've got experience, I've got expertise, I can bring that to bear. I think that's super. Really, really enjoy it. So which I would expect that healthcare communicators are doing every day anyway. So, but you know, stepping away from that specific environment, I just also go back to what we were talking about before. I think healthcare communicators have got one heck of a job to do to get pharma to a better place as a trusted sector within society and how it contributes to society.
Do you think there's more that we can do to tap into the advocacy from our employees? Because, you know, there's various data sets, but I think the overwhelming view is that actually as a workforce, there's great pride in working in the pharmaceutical sector. Is the job to unlock that and spread the word more? Or do you think there's still more to do to kind of gain that employee advocacy in the first place?
I think it's a really good place to go. Because you're right, Joe, I think the sense of purpose of working within a pharmaceutical company, what a marvellous, noble thing to be involved in, which is improving patient health and improving quality of life. Fantastic.
Thank you, Jim. I'm gonna wrap it up there. So I think I started our conversation believing that, you know, the need to prioritise and invest in people strategies and within that, obviously, internal communications, as we've touched on, as a critical business discipline has really never been so great. And I think our concluding comments there absolutely reinforce that. So after talking to you, I think this resolve has only been strengthened on my side. It's been really enlightening to talk and hear your perspective. And I know our listeners will be able to take many nuggets of wisdom and insight away to inform their daily work as I have too. So Jim Kennedy, I thank you for your time today and wish you a wonderful day.
Well, thank you again for the opportunity of participating. Thank you very much for the conversation we've had. Thanks very much for some very, very interesting and difficult questions. So
thank you. Thank you, Jim.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.